This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Hillary points a finger at her election loss. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Wednesday, May 3rd. Welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Hillary Clinton says she is partly to blame for her White House defeat, but feels at least three other factors played a role. Hear what she told a conference in New York.
The cop who shot and killed Walter Scott in North Charleston, South Carolina, has agreed to a plea bargain. Meanwhile, two patrolmen are ambushed in Chicago.
House Republicans are still scrambling to push through a second version of an Obamacare replacement, but have lost another GOP vote.
And when family business owners won't let go.
It's difficult for the younger generations to really run it the way they want to. They're more prone to take risks, start new ventures. And the older generation, you know, some of them have been through a lot of tough times and made mistakes, and they don't want those mistakes repeated, or they want to keep things safe.
And when family business owners won't let go, it can often create a logjam. Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry on why longtime owners won't give up the reins to their kids. She's here in about 20 minutes. Another House Republican has come out against the latest bill designed to replace Obamacare. The promise of a no vote from Michigan's Fred Upton yesterday shows how the legislation is losing support from lawmakers who feel it could hurt people with pre-existing health conditions. House Speaker Paul Ryan is trying to ease those concerns, highlighting the creation of new high-risk pools for people shut out of coverage and a provision stipulating that people with continuous insurance coverage cannot be denied for pre-existing conditions.
There are a few layers of protections for pre-existing conditions in this bill. What's important is we want to have a situation where people can afford their health insurance. We want to have a situation where people have a choice of health insurers. That's not happening in Obamacare.
The revised bill would allow states to waive certain Obamacare protections that now prevent insurers from charging people more based on their health. The provision was inserted to win over the conservative faction called the Freedom Caucus, but has caused some centrists to bail. Hillary Clinton is willing to take some of the blame for her election defeat, but won't take all of it.
Did I make mistakes? Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, you'll read my confession and my request for absolution.
In an interview at the Women for Women International Conference in New York yesterday, she also said Russian interference, FBI Director James Comey's 11th-hour questions about her email practices, and sexism combined to sink her candidacy. She feels there was a reluctance to elect the first woman to be president.
Women's rights is the unfinished business of the 21st century. There is no more important, larger issue that has to be addressed.
Mrs. Clinton says she's writing a book that will discuss her White House run. Meanwhile, President Trump reacted on Twitter saying, quote, "The phony Trump-Russia story was an excuse used by the Democrats for losing the election." He continued, "Perhaps Trump just ran a great campaign." Changing gears now, the former police officer from North Charleston, South Carolina, who shot an unarmed black motorist named Walter Scott, has pleaded guilty to violating the man's civil rights, a federal crime that could result in him going to prison for decades. A plea agreement reached yesterday for 35-year-old Michael Slager came a week before a federal trial was to begin. Judy Scott is the victim's mother.
Today is a good day for justice. I thank God for justice in Charleston.
Analysis now from attorney Joseph Marone, who's based in Philadelphia and has been keeping an eye on proceedings, is with us live this morning. Joseph, your reaction to the plea agreement?
Well, listen, it's not surprising at this point. They had a trial. The trial, it was a mistrial, which obviously gave that officer some leverage to negotiate the deal. The deal was an opportunity for him to avoid a life sentence. So that's basically what happened. And with this new administration, they wanted something like this to be in place to kind of set precedent so that this could work itself out.
I don't understand. What does that have to do with the new administration?
Well, Jeff Sessions obviously put a policy in place. He's looking, he's very pro-police at this time. And obviously the Justice Department wants to, you know, really protect the police and send a message out there that obviously they're going to stand behind him. There's an opportunity to get rid of this matter rather than continue to exploit it in the public. And that's basically what happened. But it was interesting because the case obviously went to trial. The jury deliberated for quite some time. The evidence was overwhelming in this case. I mean, you could see in the video that obviously there was no chance for this individual. He was running from the police officer. The officer shot him in the back, and still they struggled with finding a conviction, which tells you what the mindset is in some of the people, at least down in that part of the country.
Meaning what? What are you implying there?
Implying that, listen, obviously a lot of people are going to support the police when the police say that they're in fear on a constant basis. I mean, this matter actually started with the individual tasering or taking the taser device from the officer and tasering him, even though the video shows him running away. Still, the evidence itself is blatant. There's really the individual had no chance. But even at that, the jury sided with the officers down, at least in that region of the country, saying, yes, he was in fear at the time, and he had a right to use force, which police get to use on certain circumstances when they believe that they're reasonably they're in fear, and they were struggling with finding a guilty verdict. I mean, that's what happened in this case. They were struggling with a guilty verdict. I think when they rethought through the case and they wanted to bring it back to trial, they were worried they were going to lose the state on the murder conviction. So with the other charge being pending, the federal charge, the civil rights charge, it was an opportunity for both sides to work something out. He's still going to have a significant sentence. I mean, yeah. Potentially has a life sentence, but, you know, he has an opportunity, obviously, to argue for less. So I think both sides got something out of it.
All right, so there was this mistrial in December. Why not go for it again and hope for a similar outcome rather than agree to the plea bargain?
If you're the state and you put a case on like this where the evidence, clearly in a video, is overwhelming, the individual, you see the individual running away from the officer and he's shooting him in the back, and you see jurors struggling with that factor, you worry about the fact that you bring this case again, that you could ultimately lose, and you say lose the case. The federal case is even going to be harder to prove against the officer because the way the federal statutes are created, you have to prove what was in the officer's mind at the time that you believe he was in fear. So they could have lost the whole thing. It gave the officer an opportunity to negotiate potentially getting out of a life sentence. And the other thing, I go back to the Justice Department. This is Jeff Sessions. This is his administration. This is his opportunity to set a precedent. He really wants to get behind the police. He wants to get rid of this matter. And that's what I think they accomplished. I mean, both sides got something out of it at this point.
We're speaking live this morning with Attorney Joseph Marone in Philadelphia. So why plea, I guess, to a civil rights violation? Could there be less of a sentence for that or a different type of prison?
Yeah, at the state level, there was a murder charge. A murder charge, obviously, a conviction was a life sentence. The plea at the federal level, it could get up to a life sentence. So when you come out and you plead in a case rather than taking conviction, there's certain provisions in the law, in the sentencing law, that allows the judge to reduce the sentence. So it was an opportunity for this officer, instead of going to jail for the rest of his life, he now can maybe argue for 25 years, and he has an opportunity to come out of jail. He's not that old. He's like 52 years old. So it was a good opportunity for him. And in the same instance, I think the state got to save face by having him come out and admit to his guilt. So it was kind of a balance on both sides.
Got it. Hey, thanks for a few minutes. Always good talking to you. Attorney Joseph Marone from Philadelphia. Just to clarify, Michael Slager from North Charleston, the former cop, 35 years old. And again, no sentence yet. That could come in a couple of months from now. It's 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin have held their first conversation since American airstrikes targeted the Assad regime in Syria in retaliation for an alleged chemical weapons attack. We get more now from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
The two leaders spoke by phone yesterday for about 30 minutes about resolving the Syrian conflict. They discussed the creation of interim stability zones in Syria as a step toward peace and to provide humanitarian relief for Syrians who have been in the crossfire for better than 6 years. The U.S. also committed to sending a representative to talks this week in Kazakhstan about a ceasefire agreement. Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin also discussed the threat of North Korea, with both describing tensions on the peninsula as dangerous. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, in a plea deal with federal prosecutors, former South Carolina police officer Michael Slager admitted in court it wasn't self-defense and his use of force was unreasonable when he fatally shot Walter Scott 2 years ago. U.S. Attorney Beth Drake is South Carolina's top federal prosecutor.
He has admitted in open court to using excessive force when he shot Walter Scott in the back 5 times as he ran from a car stop.
Scott was unarmed and he was running away from that North Charleston traffic stop. Dozens of people gathered outside the Baton Rouge convenience store where Alton Sterling was fatally shot after news broke last night that the Justice Department is expected to close its investigation without bringing charges. Sterling's aunt, Sandra Sterling, is struggling with the news.
In my mind, I knew that they was going to come back with the right decision, which was to find that they violated his constitutional right. That's where my heart was.
The 37-year-old black man was shot to death last July as two white officers pinned him to the pavement where he'd been selling CDs. It was caught on cell phone video and went viral, sparking protests across the city. The Kremlin says Presidents Trump and Putin agreed to back diplomatic efforts to resolve the Syrian civil war during their phone conversation yesterday and characterized the call as businesslike and constructive. The White House announced it would send a top State Department official to Russian-led talks on Syria that begin today in Kazakhstan and that Putin and Trump will try to meet in person during an international summit in Germany in July. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas makes his first visit to the Trump White House today, invited in March during a conversation with President Trump. At that time, Trump expressed his desire to reach the ultimate deal, peace between the Palestinians and Israelis. Apple sold more than 50 million iPhones in the first 3 months of the year, but that was less than expected. So the good news, bad news earnings report sent Apple stock slipping 2% in after-hours trading. Facebook's allowing everyone to play no-download HTML5 instant games inside of Facebook Messenger. Now, this is a pretty big deal because now you can play 50 different games without having to go through the whole process of downloading them from the App Store.
You know what I did recently? That has put hours back in my life recently. I deleted the Facebook app from my phone.
Oh.
I know. Look at your face. You are shocked.
So more time for Twitter.
Oh.
Yeah, you.
That's exactly right. 23 minutes after the hour. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Almost 7 in 10 baby boomers plan to work past the age of 65. That means a lot of family businesses are dealing with parents who aren't ready to retire and their children who aren't sure when and if they will ever run the show on their own. Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry explored this sometimes awkward scenario with a handful of family businesses. Claire, what'd you find?
Well, it looked at a lot of the family-owned businesses where the first generation, or really it could be any generations, but where the older generation is not really ready to retire, even though they may be in their 60s or 70s or even 80s, and their kids are in their 30s and 40s and in management positions, but their parents are still there running the show or trying to run the show or being involved. And it's difficult for the younger generations to really run it the way they want to. They're more prone to take risks, start new ventures, and the older generation, some of them have been through a lot of tough times and made mistakes, and they don't want those mistakes repeated, or they want to keep things safe. They don't want to venture into new things. Mm. That's not always the case, but, you know, that can happen.
Right. What are some of the other reasons?
That they don't want to leave. Some people just don't want to retire. It's been their whole life. Their identity is wrapped up in the company. There's a lot of prestige. It's where their friends are. They don't want to. They may not have hobbies that they've developed. I mean, their whole world has been their company.
What does it mean socially or perhaps from a business standpoint when there's no succession here?
Well, socially, I mean, when you have somebody who's been the head of a company, I mean, not only is the world tied up, but all their connections are tied up with that, too. I mean, they, you know, they golf with their business vendors or their customers or their people in their social community. I mean, that's who their friends are, their network. So they don't want to lose that. As far as the business, you know, they've, you know, 20, 30 years of daily dealing with the banks and the customers, the vendors, you know, the suppliers. They really know intuitively how things can go. And that's something that, you know, you can try to teach.
Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry, 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, May 3rd. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: Hillary won't accept all the blame for her defeat. Netflix added warnings for episodes of 13 Reasons Why. Al Roker posted an Instagram shot of him napping during an opera performance. Yeah, it didn't go over so well. Hiker from Taiwan survived, lost in a Nepal cave for 6 weeks by eating salt and melting snow. The draw for the Kentucky Derby is today. Cubs fans damaged their World Series trophy at a charity event. Alabama's Nick Saban will get $11 million a year. And the man flushing the ashes of his friend down baseball stadium toilets. That story in about 20 minutes. By most traditional measures, the Democratic Party hit rock bottom at the outset of Donald Trump's presidency. The Democratic National Committee was leaderless and in shambles. Congress and the White House were under Republican control, as were about two-thirds of the state houses. Perhaps the most popular national figure associated with the party, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, refused to even call himself a Democrat. But Daniel Lipman, co-author of the daily newsletter called Politico Playbook, says Mr. Trump's first 100 days in office appear to have resuscitated the party. Daniel, how so?
So Democrats have used this opportunity, the first few months of Trump's term, to really rebuild the party. And there's never been more opposition in Washington towards a Republican president in decades, I would say, to what they want to do, given that they were elected, although Democrats always remind people that Trump lost the popular vote by almost 3 million votes and that there's a lot of opposition to repealing things like health care.
I mean, it strikes me, at least post-election here, the Democrats have very little credibility after what happened in the election, plus all these losses at the congressional and state level, right? I mean, they need to look inward, I think, here.
There's no two bones about it. They were crushed last November. But their activist base is really scared of Trump and, you know, thinks that he is kind of a madman. And so Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill and senators, congressmen, rank and file members, they are basically, they have no option but to have a blanket blockade or opposition towards where Trump is doing. And so there hasn't been much outreach from either side, from the White House to congressional Democrats or the other way around, to actually get things done. And just the tenor of, you know, the base itself of the Democratic Party is, you know, thinks that Trump is just not, he's not like a normal president. They are, they don't consider him establishment president, Republican. Yeah. He is not. And so they are really in opposition to everything he wants to do.
Jeez, back up for just a second. There are some Democrats, you said, who think he's a madman. right? As a successful, I'm not trying to play either side here, but I mean, successful businessman, was smart enough to engineer a campaign to defeat a very powerful and popular Hillary Clinton, and they think he's a madman? That's where this is, like 100 days later?
They think he's gone, you know, he's not fit to be president. They have not changed their mind on that front. They see his tweeting. They see the fact that he's appointed people like Ben Carson, who basically is his favorite topic to talk about as housing and urban development secretary is God, not actually improving people's housing. And so they don't think that he has really proved himself to be a good president, and they think that the energy on the Democratic side will totally give them the opportunity to take back both the House and the Senate next year.
Wow. We're speaking with Daniel Lipman at Politico. He's co-author of the daily newsletter Politico Playbook, and they've got a story running called 100 Days of Democratic Rage as we approach President Trump's 100th day in office. There's a line in the story, too. It says, this adds up to a Democratic Party suddenly fueled by a massive outpouring of energy, but without the established power structures to channel and amplify it. Meaning what here, Daniel?
It means that the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, which was hacked by the Russians last cycle, they haven't even appointed top leadership to take advantage of the grassroots energy. You're seeing all these, it's almost like a Tea Party on the left. Basically, you have these groups like Indivisible, who are sprouting up around the country, you know, hundreds of these chapters. To any time when a congressman or senator goes home, they come out in force, and they basically give their member of Congress or their senator kind of their own two cents on what they should do when they go back to Washington.
Daniel Lipman, co-author of the daily newsletter called Politico Playbook. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into a Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, in case you missed it, there was a touching moment at Fenway Park last night. One day after Baltimore Orioles outfielder Adam Jones made news by saying he was taunted by racial slurs by fans and had a bag of peanuts thrown at him during Monday's game against the Red Sox, Jones came to bat for the first time in last night's game and was met with an unexpected greeting by Boston fans, as described by Bob Costas on the MLB Network.
A sizable percentage of the Fenway fans coming to their feet to acknowledge Jones, not as a visiting player, but as a human being who should not have had to hear what he heard last night.
Earlier in the day, Red Sox star Mookie Betts took to Twitter to encourage fans to literally stand up for Jones and say no to racism, and it looks like they got the message. Of course, the good vibes couldn't last forever as the teams resumed the heated series with Orioles star Manny Machado being thrown at intentionally, then unleashing a profanity-laced tirade directed at the Sox after the game.
Good, because all is returned to normal now.
Right, exactly. Every game between these two teams, there's been some bad blood happening. It's only the beginning of May.
Yeah.
So and they're both fighting for first place, and it should be interesting to see how this goes down the rest of the year.
And you know what happens when baseball players get heated? Sometimes they push each other.
There might be a little grabbing.
Yeah. Unlike hockey.
Yeah.
Where they mean it.
Right. They might stare at each other for a while. Somebody might take a few steps towards the mound, then the catcher will pull them back.
Somebody might throw a fake punch, like just cock their arm back.
Yeah.
Or run behind somebody else, say, stop me. Yeah, it's a baseball players.
Right. Unless you're Rougned Odor from last year.
That's fair enough.
Then you get a nice punch in. But again, the guy has to be right next to you, and he can't really be paying attention. And you've heard us say this on the show before. While they're not always the most jovial folks in person, the TSA is a must-follow on social media because of the photos they post depicting some of the crazy stuff that people try to bring with them on airplanes. The most recent example comes from an Instagram post showing an apparently marijuana smoking device found in a carry-on bag made from an old grenade, some padlocks, and a metal box. The post said that while the grenade was inert, nobody knows that until explosives professionals take a closer look, which takes time and slows down the line. As to why the non-explosive device wouldn't be allowed on the plane, the TSA said simply, "Would you like to see somebody pull a grenade out of their bag at 30,000 feet?"
I think the answer is a resounding no.
Good one. Good one by the TSA.
Yeah. That stuff's always fantastic.
Yes. I do follow them on Instagram.
Yes.
It is pretty comical sometimes, like what they find. And by the way, I'm glad the TSA agent that discovered this did not pull it out of the bag and hold it up and say, hey, whose grenade is this?
Yeah.
That could have caused problems at the airport also.
The best part is that, again, this was supposed to be a device for smoking marijuana.
Yeah.
It was passed off as, when they asked him what it was, they said it was art. The person said it was art,
yes,
quote unquote.
Well, that may be true, but it just doesn't tell the whole story, perhaps.
Right.
Thank you, Mike.
Multiple uses.
13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Justice Department will not pursue federal civil rights charges against two white police officers whose fatal shooting of a black man outside a Baton Rouge convenience store last summer stoked nationwide protests. Louisiana's attorney general is still considering whether to bring state charges in the Alton Sterling case. Two Chicago police officers hospitalized after being shot in an apparent ambush. They were in their car in the South Side's Back of the Yards neighborhood when two vehicles pulled up and someone started to fire indiscriminately into the cop car. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's grateful the officers are expected to recover.
People take it for granted that when police officers come to work every day, they put their lives on the line every single day they get in that car to protect the citizens of this city.
A reversal by the suburban Dallas Police Department, whose officer fatally shot a black 15-year-old leaving a party Saturday night.
I have made the decision to terminate Roy Oliver employment with the Balk Springs Police Department.
Police Chief Jonathan Haber. Oliver initially said the car Jordan Edwards is in was driving aggressively towards him, prompting the shot, but Haber says body camera video shows it was driving away from the officers. The Trump administration sent Budget Chief Mick Mulvaney out to defend the controversial $1 trillion-plus stopgap budget deal. Armed with charts and pictures, he told reporters the deal contains no Obamacare bailout money, no money for Puerto Rico's Medicaid, and no renewable energy subsidies, among other GOP wins.
The message that we're sending is that we are competent, we know what we're doing, and the country is safe in our hands, and we think this goes to prove that.
At a congressional hearing, United CEO Oscar Munoz apologized again about the dragging incident on an overbooked flight. The big topic? Overbooking should stop because passengers should sit in the seat they paid for. Members of Congress told Munoz and other execs present, if the airlines don't fix it, we will. Meanwhile, another throwdown on an airliner. Two men started throwing punches aboard an all Nippon Airways flight to LAX while it was still in the boarding process at Narita International Airport. One passenger told another he was going to kill him. Then he punched a flight attendant. He choked a male airline employee before being arrested and charged with assault. He's identified as a 44-year-old American. And of course, there is video.
Of course. Otherwise, the story probably doesn't make that much news.
You really need to behave yourself at all times in public.
Yeah, punching on airplanes is generally frowned upon, as we've seen as of late. Let's just have a drink, sit down, read a magazine, enjoy the flight home.
Because the cell phones are running.
Always. 6 minutes in front of the hour. New York City man is on a mission to flush the cremated remains of his lifelong friend down ballpark toilets around the country. Tom McDonald told the New York Times it's a fitting tribute for Roy Riegel because he was a plumber. CBS News says the two baseball fans were childhood friends in Queens, not far from Flushing Meadows, where the Mets play. Like baseball, this endeavor has rules. The game has to be in progress when this is being done. He's done it so far at 16 stadiums. In Chicago, he did it at a White Sox game but skipped Wrigley, because the Cubs are rivals of the Mets. Mr. Riegel's family agreed to share a portion of the ashes after his death in 2008. Mr. McDonald spoons out a little bit each time from an old peanut can. He has enough ashes left for one more tribute, and he hopes to do it at Durham Athletic Park in North Carolina, where the movie Bull Durham was filmed. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.